occupational therapist and a certified aging in place specialist. And this is the Home Designs for Life podcast, your resource for aging in place and universal design. For more resources on aging in place, please visit my website, homedesignsforlife.com. There you will find my blog and more valuable information on how you can age in place and create a home for life. Hi, and joining us today is Tracy Perez. She has an incredible story that she wants to share with us today. She has been a caregiver for a number of years now to her husband, Juan Perez. And I feel we should let Tracy tell the story. She's the one who tells it best. So Tracy, thank you for being with us today. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, we're so happy that you're with us and really so excited about learning from you and the challenges that you experienced after your husband was in a terrible car accident. Tell us about how your lives changed on September 29th, 2017.
Well, it was a beautiful Friday morning here in Georgia. I was on my way to an appointment that morning. I think it was around 8:45, 9 o'clock. And I actually was on the phone with my mom while I was in the car driving. And I had a caller ID or unknown number come up. And I didn't answer it because generally, you know, that's spam or something. But this time, the caller left a message. And I said to my mom, something inside of me was like, something's not right. I said, Mom, the caller ID left a message. Let me just see what it is. So I got off the phone. I clicked on the message. It came through my Bluetooth and it said, this is so-and-so, VU University, Amsterdam. You need to call back or something. I don't know. Because I think my brain at that time was like, danger, Will Robinson. Something's not right. So I tried to call that number back and it wouldn't let me because, again, it was in Amsterdam and I'm in the U.S. and I, at that time, did not have international calling on my cell service. So I thought, well, let me call my husband because I think at that time he should have been like at the airport or actually at that time he should have been in the air. Anyways, I called his cell number and the hospital answered. And they said, there's been an accident. And at this time, I had pulled off the highway. I was on 400 and I pulled off to a vacant liquor store that wasn't open. And she said, I've spoken to the doctor and asked if you should come. And he said, yes. Mm-hmm. And at the time, she said, are you with anybody, family or friends? And I said, no. And I remember not thinking at the time that this is a crucial piece of information. Like I knew in my brain it was serious, but I didn't know how serious. So she actually wouldn't give me any more information until I got to a friend's house. And then when I got there, she said, there's been an accident. He's in surgery. And you need to come. So that was the start of the last 4 years.
And tell us about Juan's injuries.
He was a passenger behind the driver in a taxi on the way to the airport and a tram derailed and hit the taxi he was riding in on his side. And he suffered a TBI DAI with multiple other injuries. He had a severe shoulder injury. He had internal bleeding. He had some broken ribs, lacerated lungs, a punctured spleen. Those injuries healed very well. His brain injury is the lifelong trauma that we live with every day. He healed actually quite well initially. They had him intubated and totally on life support when we got there. And within 2 days, they had pulled everything back and he was strong enough to do it on his own. So he recovered well in the sense his body did what it was supposed to, but the brain was just, it was hit hard. And recently a neuroradiologist read one of his scans and had said, you know, it is amazing what you are able to get from him because his brain looks like an 80-year-old man.
Oh, wow. And how old was Juan when the accident took place?
We both had just turned 50. We called it the year of the 50. And we were looking forward to celebrating that year. Our grandson, our first grandson, had just turned one in August. And we just had built our forever home. And we had so much to look forward to. We were kind of starting a new chapter in our life. And that was a big hit.
I'm so sorry, Tracy. I know that as an occupational therapist, I've had many patients with traumatic brain injuries, and it really is the worst type of injury that anyone can have. Just because the recovery road, you don't know where it's going to take you.
Right. And so, the ambiguous grief of it, that's the biggest part of it, is the ambiguous grief, because, you know, much like Alzheimer's and dementia and those types of brain diseases, the person is there, but they're not. And trying to hold that every day, it takes a lot of effort emotionally, physically. It takes a lot.
Yes. Tell us, what was it like bringing Juan back home?
It was scary. You know, I'd never experienced this. And one of the things I said, you know, I was 50 at the time and I felt like I had lived some life. I'd had some experiences, good and bad. And I had no one to lean on. No one in my realm of life had ever experienced this. So I didn't know where to pull. I didn't know who to call. And slowly things started to take shape. I called them God whispers along the way. I knew somebody who knew somebody who got us into Shepherd right away. And that was instrumental in his early recovery. And one of the things I've said often through this journey is, what I don't know hurts me. And what I do know hurts me. So I've always tried to stay in the middle, not looking too far forward and not looking back and staying in the middle. So bringing him home was a task in itself with the insurance hiccups, and there were a lot of them. Finally getting home and learning to advocate, that was a lot, because I feel like I've advocated in small ways, and I think we all do in some ways in our life, but to be full-on advocate for my husband, who could not do anything for himself, was enormous and overwhelming and daunting.
I can imagine. And tell us about how you made the bridge from him being in a facility to preparing to bring him back to live with you.
Well, it took a team. God whispers again. I had amazing people in my life, amazing support. And through the process of advocating for him and learning about recovery facilities and brain injury recovery, I knew that the greatest environment for Juan was to be home. I say that for him, but I think that's for anybody, to be able to recover from anything or age out of anything, disease, you know, aging in general, would be to be home. And so I started inquiring. I started making notes of the things that I saw that worked and didn't work. And our case manager was instrumental in putting me in touch with the people that I needed to help make this happen. And I just ran with it. I had the people, we had the plan. I put it forth to the insurance companies, and lo and behold, we got it. And I say to everyone, it's the hardest, best decision I've ever made. And my husband is the steadiest he's ever been by being home here and being cared for.
Yeah, I totally agree with you that the best place to recover is being in your usual environment yes. and being around family. Mm-hmm. Now, tell us, so this is a workman's comp case.
Yes.
Just so our listeners are aware, and workman's comp paid for the home modifications that were necessary to bring Juan back home.
They did. Yep, they did. There are a few things that were outside, but those were things that I had asked for. But the general modification for the home was covered by workman's comp. And they came, they got to see it, and were quite pleasantly surprised at what they had approved. And I was proud of that.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the dream team that was assembled to make this modification possible.
Well, Travis Camario of Camario Builders, he was the lead on this. He had the contract to build it out. And then we had Peggy Friedman. She is a OT out of, I feel like her office is Sandy Springs, Roswell. I can't remember. Jane Norman, our case manager, and Gerald Orr, which is a mobility specialist with 101 Mobility. And collectively, we met many times going over the plans, throwing out ideas, looking at my husband and his needs and projecting that for aging out, aging in place, all of that. Like everything was accounted for, from the floors to the blackout blinds to the faucets to the radius of the turning for the wheelchair. Everyone brought their mm-hmm. ideas to the table and it became this wonderful project. And oddly enough, we met with the lawyers from Workman's Comp with our contractor. We all came together and Travis put this beautiful presentation of the original project on a slideshow. And he prefaced the whole thing with our story, a little bit about what happened with Juan, our family. He had pictures. And I tell you, at the end of that, there wasn't a dry eye in that room. Mm. And I feel like that presentation, all of us being there, was so powerful for the people making the decisions with Workman's Comp that when I left there, I thought there is no way they can reject this. Because I think oftentimes things are presented to them and it's just a number or mm-hmm. a name that they're not familiar with, obviously. But what Travis did to make that really personal, I think was key in us getting the approval to move forward.
I agree. I've seen that video. And it was very, very touching.
It really was. I was so proud of him and for him because he did such a great job.
He did. And kudos to him yeah. for thinking of that as a builder.
Yes, exactly.
Because that really is not in his wheelhouse.
And it's not normal. I'm not that schooled in all of this, but I haven't ever heard of anybody doing anything like that.
No, I hadn't either. And, whenever I've had to write evaluations to make recommendations for people to have modifications done in their home, the extent is just a written report.
Right.
So to include a video, where the insurance team could see Juan, what life was like before the accident, the changes that the accident brought, not just to him, but to you, to your children, how that affected all of you, how you live, where you live.
Right.
Because I understand that you and Juan had built your forever home prior to the accident.
We did. And we actually had plans drawn up ready to do what we were going to do here. And we had all, signed off on it. And it just hit me. I can't stay here. We were up in Dawsonville. It was 7 miles from 400 in the country. Getting help up there would have been, I just wouldn't have been able to get help, staff for my husband. And then being so far from even the closest hospital, Northside Forsyth would be 35, 40 minutes maybe on a good day. And then Shepherd, mm-hmm. we still have a lot of connections in Shepherd with doctors and things. So I had to make that decision, and it wasn't an easy one, but it was necessary. And I sold the house and came closer into the Suwannee Cumming area and picked the house that I'm in primarily for my husband, because the basement mm-hmm. needed to be the size we needed it so he would be comfortable. And the rest is history, so they say.
Right. And tell us, what are the current medical needs that your husband requires on a daily basis?
He actually doesn't require any medical needs, but he does need caregivers 24/7. He medically is very stable and very healthy, aside from his brain injury. He's a fall risk. He has some swallow issues, but those are all monitored and taken care of with the care. He has two-on-one care during the day and one-on-one at night. The medications he's on have helped him to settle. He has this motor restlessness that is just puzzling to the doctors and to the staff, myself. We just can't figure out where it came from or why, because it wasn't there originally, and it has evolved over time. So that's predominantly the reason why he needs two-on-one, because he doesn't sit. We've monitored that with a nurse that came in for a couple weeks, and she just fully monitored him and realized he sits for 40 seconds, gets up, walks for 40 seconds, sits for 40 seconds, gets up, mm-hmm. walks for 40 seconds. That has changed some. It has settled down, and that's much easier on the staff. But medically, he's an anomaly, because he is so healthy and mm-hmm. his brain is just so hurt and injured.
Mm. Yeah, I'm so sorry, Tracy.
It's really, you know, it's not okay, but I'm okay. Like, we're okay. In the middle of it, you know, I never asked, just recently I started asking why. Like, why? And it isn't even as much about me as for my husband, because he was so vibrant. And if you don't mind, mm-hmm. I'll tell a little story. Yesterday,
yes, go ahead.
Yesterday, I was downstairs talking with the staff, and Juan was present, and I always include him. And we were talking about one of the things that made him tick. And one of the things that made him tick was respect. And if he felt disrespected, it was something that he really challenged. And so I'd said all that, and we ended the conversation, and they were getting ready to work with him. And I went around the corner, and he had gotten up, came around the corner, and just slammed the wall. And that's how he shows his frustration. So I went back and I sat with him and I said, honey, you know, if you're frustrated, you can use your words, because he can speak if prompted. And I said, you could say something like, I'm frustrated. And so I waited for him to take in the information. And I said, so if you're frustrated, you would say, I'm, and he said, broken.
Oh.
And the hardest part is not for me as much now, it's for him knowing that he knows enough.
Uh-huh.
And there's not a lot I can do about it, but provide an environment where he's safe and cared for and loved and still has some sort of meaning.
Yes. Well, that's beautiful what you just said. And it's beautiful that you didn't give up on him and you wanted to keep him home. I, you know, I've been with so many families in the past 12 years, and I can tell you that not everyone is a willing caregiver. So Juan is very lucky to have you, Tracy.
I was lucky to have him, but I will say, and I think I've mentioned this many times and maybe to you recently, that I don't blame people who can't do it. It's really, really hard. And if you can't separate what's going on from the person, you can't do it. It's a difficult journey, I think, for any caregiver. And I can't fault them.
I agree with that.
You've really got to pull yourself up by the bootstraps many days. And if people have to work or they have young children, you know, there are a lot of life's obstacles that come in on top of the trauma that you may be facing, and it's not easy. So I've had what I like to call a perfect storm. I've had a good marriage, and I've learned a lot, and I've had a lot of good people around me. So with that, I created this environment, and I hope that going forward, we will be able to help others that come behind us.
Yes. And tell us about the environment that you created. Tell us about your beautiful basement remodel.
Well, I'm very proud of it, and I'm very proud of the team. I think it's a very conducive environment for Juan for therapy. We have a sensory room where he does all of his therapies. It's all but soundproof so that he can be in there and just be present with the therapist and doing whatever they need to do. It's also a room where the staff can bring him when he needs quiet and just time to chill. There's I've totally lost my train of thought. This is what happens. Sometimes I wonder who has the brain injury, me or my husband. We have a projector where we can put scenescapes up there of the ocean and the mountains, and we've got a vibrating bed in there that really helps to calm the senses when you lay on it. His bathroom is 100% geared toward him. We have a 3-person shower with non-slip flooring. The faucets are automatic. They're just a touch to turn off and on. Tilted mirrors. We have an infrared sauna, which is so wonderful for the body. And I'm trying to think of all the things that we did. We did a pantry so that Juan could have access should he, you know, participate more in activities of daily living. His bedroom and the area around that is geared more for, it's geared for now, but we've also put in place those things that he may need when he ages, like the Hoyer lift. There's a whole track system that goes from his bedroom to the bathroom. I feel like there was no stone unturned. Like we thought of it all. I really do.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I think some people may say, oh, it's extravagant. And it is maybe with some of the material and stuff, but it really is basic. What I feel like anybody in my husband's position would need. And that is space, accommodations, everything. Mm-hmm. The blackout.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, surfaces that are durable,
yes,
easy to clean,
yes.
Low maintenance.
Yes, exactly. We have an elevator.
Yeah.
We did end up putting an elevator in from the garage, which has been instrumental in getting him to and from, especially if there's inclement weather. We had a sidewalk put in that wraps around my house so the staff can come and go and also get him in and out. The contractor put these ramps to every entrance and exit.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is, I can't even think of anything. I was in a facility for 2 years with my husband while this was being built out, and I just was amazed at the lack of accommodations for people with disabilities that were there. I just mm-hmm. was in shock.
Right. And you didn't want that to be the case in your future home and for the rest of your life.
No, exactly. It's a big enough struggle to deal with the trauma of what has happened and then not to be able to have simple things like being able to take him in the shower and get him a normal shower without, you know, worrying somebody was going to get hurt or slip or fall.
Exactly. Yeah. And then one thing that I really like about your remodel is that they also considered things that you needed. For example, privacy from the caregiving staff, which is there 24 hours a day.
Yes. And I didn't know how much I was going to need that. I really didn't. I was like, nah, good. But I'm really glad for it. And because I do need to separate myself at times, it just gets to be too much. So to be able to just come upstairs and shut it away, have my grandchildren over and do that, it's great. And we have the ability also, everything is upstairs. One of the other reasons I picked this house was that the main floor is very conducive to having Juan up there with his wheelchair and everything. So prior to finishing out the basement, we came many times so I could show him, and we would have lunch and he would have a nap on the main floor bedroom bed. And so there were many aspects of this home in general that I knew were going to be good for all of us. And for the team to say, you know, Tracy, you need that separation. You've got to get away from it. It's been instrumental in my own well-being.
Yes, I agree. Cause you can't be a caregiver if you yourself aren't taken care of.
Right. It took me a long time. They, you know, the saying, put the oxygen mask on yourself first. Well, I didn't do that right away because I couldn't even see the forest for the trees on that one, but I have learned and it has been helpful. It is helpful.
And tell us, going back to the sensory room, I know that Travis Camerio won an award for that.
We've won several.
Creation. You won several awards from the Obie Awards here in Atlanta. So tell us about that.
Well, I think it's exceptional. It's definitely not the standard, and that's something that I'm very proud of. The room, I don't even know. I think it may have been Peggy that was instrumental in saying, hey, have you thought about this based on Juan's need and how he was presenting? And so Travis said, well, I know this company, and he brought it in, and I didn't take any notes ahead of this little talk, so I can't remember the name of the company off the top of my head, but they came, we told them, some of the things that we wanted for Juan. So we have this water feature, that's a standalone little thing, and it's got these, fishes in it. They're not real. And it bubbles and it changes colors. And then we have this lighting that goes around the room. It's a very soothing environment. And again, the vibrating table and the projector. I just think to myself, how lucky are we to have this, and how do I help somebody else get it?
Yes. And I'm so glad that you formed that bridge, because that was my next question. Is what advice or what tips do you have for people that are in the situation that you were in at the very beginning, where you really didn't even know, like you said, you don't know what you don't know, and what you don't know hurts you. Mm-hmm. What is the message that you have for people who are in a different place from where you were?
I think
from where you currently are.
I think initially when you're first in it, of course you don't know what to do about anything. But when the fog begins to lift, I've got a couple of things. Ask a lot of questions. Don't take what's being said as the end all. Mm-hmm. And secondly, no is not an answer. Push to find out what can be done. What are my options? And then it goes back to ask the questions. Ask, who can I talk to? What is available? And you know, now we have the internet, and it's so vast in sort resources out there that you just start locally. There are many organizations that you can go to, like Brain Injury of America. And in my case, Shepherd Center was instrumental in offering classes for me to take. And no is not an answer. That was my biggest thing. You're not going to tell me no. There's got to be a different way, or there's got to be more. And I just continued doing that. And eventually I found what I needed.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. You definitely have to be persistent.
Yes.
And one thing I always say to people is, if you don't ask for what you want, you're not
going to
get
it. Exactly. They're not going to tell you. The insurance companies aren't going to say, oh, by the way, we will give you this. They're not. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, okay, here's what we have, and that's what we have. And I feel, based on my own experience, you can say, well, I'm not going to settle for that, and I think there's more. How do I get more? And it happened. I can't complain right. one bit. I got it. And I do believe that others can have the ability to do that as well.
I agree with you. And I just want to mention for our listeners that your husband's case was the highest, most complex case for workman's comp.
Yes.
That you received the highest sum for the changes that you needed in your home.
That's correct? My understanding. We were one, if not the highest, one of the highest awarded for what we did. And I think they should be proud too. Honestly, I think they get a bad rap, workman's comp, but they're covering, you know, the medical side of my husband's care, and they've done a great job. I've had to advocate and, you know, push some buttons and things like that, but they have done a great job, and I'm grateful for it. People just need to understand their rights and what is available to them, and laws need to change as well. We're behind the times in a lot of things. And I mean, I think about the VA and what they offer, what I understand they offer. I think they're evolving as well, but there are so many more advancements in like a shower chair that
mm-hmm. we don't have I agree with you.
Ones anymore. They are more comfortable, more movable type equipment that is out there, and you don't have to just settle for it.
Right. Or where you can create modifications in your home where it's never evident that the space was modified.
Yes.
And so it looks beautiful, just like the bathroom in your basement. It looks beautiful and it looks like it's made for you or for me.
Right. And he didn't, you know, what I say about my experience is we did live a nice life. We had a certain standard for ourselves that we worked so hard for. And mm-hmm. I had said to myself, I don't even think consciously, he still has that right. He still has that right to live that way with this injury. Just because he's injured doesn't mean that he has to go backward in life.
Right. And especially when you're injured, that is when you need to be comfortable.
Exactly.
Yeah, you'll have better health, better hygiene, you know, if you have, you know, an accessible bathroom. And I've had so many patients that they can't even enter their bathroom.
I know.
Because the wheelchair can't go through the doors.
I know.
So
I could tell my own stories at the facility, so I get it.
Yeah.
It's appalling to me that people would live this way. It's funny, when I left Shepherd to go on to the facility, I went to an appointment, I think it was shortly before we left, and it was at an office building. And when you go into the Shepherd Center, everything automatically opens because it is geared toward disability. So you don't have to worry. You don't even have to touch anything. And so I go uh-huh. to this office building and I wait at the door for like 2 seconds. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not at Shepherd. Like, I had to open the door and go in. But it made me realize at that moment, actually, how the world is not geared toward disability. There are so many things that I encounter with my husband and taking him out for appointments and different things that I'm like, oh, geez. Mm-hmm. This is where
it's a struggle.
Yeah, it's a big struggle.
Yeah, I realized that when I had my first child and I lived in Spain, and there were stairs everywhere, and I had to carry her stroller down a flight of stairs,
mm-hmm.
you know, because nothing was accessible.
Yeah. I'm the same. We had my daughter in Germany and we lived on the fourth floor of the apartment building. No elevator.
Yeah. Well, Tracy, before we end our conversation today, I wanted to ask you to tell us a little bit about Juan prior to his accident and who he was.
Well, as I said, we'll be married 34 years, the end of this month. We were really young, 20 when we got married. And what I love most about my husband is he was willing to sacrifice. He was willing to change. He was willing to evolve. When he knew better, he did better. He was kind and loyal and devoted and headstrong. We worked hard at our marriage. We worked hard at our life. Our kids knew he was devoted to me and devoted to them. Our friends knew the same. I am so fortunate to have been his wife. And because of that, I can do what I'm doing and continue to do what I'm doing.
Well, that's such a beautiful story. And I think, you know, that we can all learn from a love story like yours and, you know, just see that there really is true love and true dedication and commitment. And we see it in your marriage and how you've stayed committed to your husband, you know, even after experiencing, you know, challenges that no one can even just begin to understand. Even as a therapist, I couldn't even begin to understand what it's like to live like that day in and day out.
It's not easy, but it's doable. Again, you have to hold both at the same time, the grief and the joy. You have to hold it both. And some days one takes over the other, and it's okay. You have to let it come and let it go. And it's worth it in the end. It's ultimately in the end, probably about me and who I am too. And that's just how I was made. I mean, I've been a caregiver my whole life, and I guess I will be until I die, but it's worth it. And I'm glad to say that me and my family are getting to some other side of it. I don't know what that really means, because I don't think it ever really goes away, but I think we're finding the new normal, as everyone says, and it can be possible to live a full life and still have everything that we had before, in the middle of this journey. So,
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Tracy. It's so valuable. It's beautiful. It's heartwarming. And it's inspirational, to say the least.
Well, I'm hoping, like I said, that it will help anybody who's coming up from behind, because, having lived it, you have a lot of valuable, I don't know if words, experiences and, to get to pass on.
You do. You certainly do. Yeah. Thank you so much, Tracy.
Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.